This program is brought to you by Israel Restoration Ministries.
What are you doing Sunday nights? Come join Friendship with God radio Bible teacher Tom Cantor of the Friendship with God Fellowship Church every Sunday night at 5:30 p.m. at The Vine at 9336 Abraham Way, Santee, California. Watch and listen live around the world to Tom Cantor Sunday evening on YouTube.com by searching for Friendship with God Fellowship or by going to our homepage at friendshipwithgod.org. That's friendshipwithgod.org.
Welcome to Friendship with God with our Bible teacher, Tom Cantor. Today's message and previous messages can be listened to or downloaded for free at friendshipwithgod.org.
And the report that Ezra got was that the people of the land and the leadership of Israel were one. They were echad. They were engaged in filthy activities, which for sure included idolatry. And when Ezra heard this, he was in shock, absolute shock. And he asked, how is this possible that the people who have been punished with so much death, sword, 70 years of slavery because of these very sins, how could it be possible that when they're freed, they go back to the vomit that they left behind? And Ezra is told how it was possible in verse 2. In verse 2, they have taken of their daughters for themselves, for their sons, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. Yea, the land of the princes and rulers hath been chief in this trespass. How is it possible? Marriage. Marriage. Israel had plunged into the filthy lives of idolatry and sexual immorality because of marriages. They took for wives the women of that land, women who only knew filthy lifestyles and idolatry. And now families with Israeli men were corrupted into a cesspool of sexual sins. Israel gave their daughters, their beautiful daughters, to the men of the land who only knew filthy lifestyles and idolatry. And now families with Israeli daughters were corrupted into a cesspool of sexual sins. And when Ezra heard that the Israeli men had taken the godless women, he thought to himself, again this happens? Why again? Old play, old book. King of Moab hired Balaam, and he said to Balaam, destroy Israel with a curse. And he promised to give Balaam a room full of gold. If you just do it, I'll give you a room full of gold. I'll fill this room with gold if you get God to curse Israel. Get God to destroy Israel. And Balaam did his best to destroy Israel with a curse. But every time Balaam tried to destroy Israel and get God to curse, Balaam ended up blessing Israel. And the blessing came right out of his own mouth in Numbers 24:3. He took up his parable and said, Balaam, the son of Beor, hath said, and the man whose eyes are open hath said, he hath said, which heard the words of God, which saw the vision of the Almighty, falling into a trance, but having his eyes open, how goodly are thy tents, O Jacob, and thy tabernacles, O Israel. As the valleys are they spread forth, as gardens by the riverside, as trees of lime aloes, which the Lord hath planted, and as cedar trees beside the waters. He shall pour the water out of his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. He shall eat up the nations, his enemies, and shall break their bones and pierce them through with the arrows. He couched as he lay down as a lion, and as a great lion, who shall stir him up? Blessed is he that blesseth thee, and cursed is he that curseth thee, he says about the Jewish people. And it was so bad for the king of Moab that he told Balaam in Numbers 24:10, Balak the king's anger was kindled against Balaam, and he smote his hands together, and Balak the king said unto Balaam, I call thee to curse mine enemy, and behold, thou hast altogether blessed them these three times. Therefore now flee thou to thy place. I thought to promote thee unto great honor, but lo, the Lord hath kept thee back from honor. And Balaam said unto the king Balak, spake I not also to thy messengers, which thou sentest unto me, saying, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the commandment of the Lord to either good or bad of mine own mind. But what the Lord saith, that will I speak. King Balak was powerless to destroy Israel by getting God to curse Israel. King Balak could not pay enough money to the prophet Balaam to get Balaam, who was a wicked prophet, but he could not get him to curse Israel. And then King Balak came up with a way. It was a surefire way for him to get God to destroy Israel. That's the goal. Get God to destroy Israel. Somebody in his group, maybe him, I don't know, he's got a brainstorm. Maybe it was the king of Moab, I don't know, or Balak or some other Moabite, but the brainstorm was, don't you know? We've been going about this all wrong and trying to get Israel destroyed by God. We've been trying to get God to curse Israel, and God has no reason to destroy Israel. What we got to do is get God a reason to want to destroy Israel. Get God to want to destroy Israel. Now, God hates sin. Oh, very simple, boys. All we got to do is get Israel to sin, and then God will destroy Israel. Simple. And someone says, yeah, so how do we get Israel to sin? And the answer comes back, sex, sexual sins. We've got the ultimate secret weapon. We got a Trojan horse here that can get inside of the Jewish men and get them to sin, and then God will destroy them because of sin. That's simple. Our secret weapon is, ta-da, our drop-dead gorgeous Moabite women. All we got to do is send our gorgeous Moabite women to the Jewish men, and it'll be more effective than a COVID virus to destroy them. And they turn loose, those drop-dead gorgeous Moabite women, and they worked like heat-seeking missiles. They went right for the warm hearts of those Israeli men. And the next thing we read in the Bible was the Israeli men took the bait. Numbers 25:1. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. Moab let loose a brigade of Moabite Lolitas, and they called out those Israeli men with the words like Proverbs 9:17, stolen waters are sweet, bread eaten in secret is pleasant. Proverbs 7:18, come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. And as fast as bees go to honey, those Israeli men fled to those tents of sin. The Israeli men went like sheep to the slaughter. Proverbs 9:18. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and that her guests are in the depths of hell. And down those Israeli men fell one by one, and their hearts became joined together with those Moabite women. And the hearts of those Israeli men became one with the hearts of those Moabite women, as Paul said in 1 Corinthians 6:16. What? Know you not that he which is joined to a harlot is one body? For two, saith he, shall be one flesh. And once those Israeli men became one physically with those Moabite women, the hook was set, and it was time for those women just to reel in their catch. Bring them in, Numbers 25:1-2. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab, and they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods, and the people did eat and bow down to their gods. It's interesting in that verse in Numbers 25:2, that it says, they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. It was those daughters of Moab that the Israeli men had committed fornication with who were calling them. First, the Moabite women called the Israeli men to their tents for a little, hey guys, what happens in Moab stays in Moab. And then once those women had set the hook into the heart of those men said, I just want to be with you. I want to be one with you. And then those women just reeled them in like a fish on a hook. Numbers 25:2, they called the people unto the sacrifices of their gods. And the people did eat and bowed down to their gods. And we can hear the Israeli men say to the women, I've never seen anyone so beautiful as you. I've never known anyone so exotic as you. I want to be with you all the time. I want to know everything about you. Don't leave me. I want to be with you all the time. I want to do what you do. And then we can hear the women say to them, you want to be one with me? Then know everything about me. Know my gods. You want to love me? Love my gods. You want to be with me all the time? Then come with me when I go to sacrifice to my gods. You want to do everything that I do, then when I sacrifice to my gods, you sacrifice to my gods. And the hook was set in their hearts of the Israeli men. With the fornication of the men, they were reeled in with the four statements. Know me and my gods. Love me and my gods. Be with me when I go to my gods. Sacrifice to my gods and bow down with me to my gods and eat with me before my gods. And it was all Proverbs 7:22. He goeth after her straightway as an ox goeth to the slaughter or as a fool to the correction of the stocks till a dart strike through his liver as a bird hasteth to the snare and knoweth not that it is for his life. And when those Jewish men followed their new loves to their gods, they didn't even feel the knife go into their liver. All those Jewish men saw was their newly found, drop-dead, gorgeous women, Moabite women. And all God saw in those Jewish men is what God hates, idolatry. Idolatry. And one of those enemies listed in Ezra 9:1, in verse 1 of chapter 9 of Ezra, was the Moabites. So all those enemies of Israel did get Israel. All they wanted to do is get them off my land. This is Palestine. Get them off. The word Palestine comes from the word Philistine. Philistine were the original inhabitants of Canaan. They were the sea peoples before Joshua came into the land there. So to call the land Palestine, which is commonly done today, it's very offensive. Why? It's the same as if you would call America India for the American Indians who originally took this land. You say, it's not America, it's India land. That's what the word Palestine means. So all they want to do is get them off my land. Get those Jews off my land. That's all they want to do. And so the Moabites were part of them there. And they said, oh, wait a minute, we'll take a tactic out of the old playbook of Moab. Oh, let's look back here, Numbers 25. And all the princes and Ezra saw was the sin of mingling. Verse 2, the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. And Satan uses this tactic out of the old playbook today. And all Satan has to do is get a believer to just to sing the words of the Beatles song. Just as I give her all my love. That's all I do. If you saw my love, you'd love her too. And I love her. Marriage with an unbeliever is very dangerous. Why? It's easier for an unbeliever to convert a believer than it is for a believer to convert an unbeliever. And we're called as believers to be separate. Be separate, God says, 2 Corinthians 6:16. 2 Corinthians 6:16. What agreement hath the temple of God with idols? You are the temple of the living God. As God hath said, I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I'll be their God, and they shall be my people. Wherefore, come out from among them and be ye separate, saith the Lord. Touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty. But in what sense are we to come out from unbelievers and be separate from unbelievers? This last week, I was privileged to be able to make and strengthen a very close relationship with an Israeli family, with an Israeli man. We spent the week together. At the end of the week, he wrote me, "Dear Tom, thank you for spending time with me and my family. Thank you for the extraordinary experiences and adventure that we will undoubtedly take with us for life." He's not a believer. So how are we to separate ourselves from unbelievers? We're not to separate ourselves from unbelievers physically, as the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 5:9, I wrote unto you in an epistle not to company with fornicators, but yet not altogether with the fornicators of this world, or with the covetous, or extortioners, or with idolatries, for then must you needs go out of the world. You got to leave if that's what you want to do. Israel and those Canaanites had to live in the same town and sometimes in the same house. Physical separation is not what God is calling us to do. We're not to separate from unbelievers nationally. No, we're all Americans in the same country. We're not to separate from unbelievers commercially. No, we have to do business with unbelievers. We are to separate from unbelievers spiritually. Spiritually, when it comes to having the same views of who God is, we separate. When it comes to having the same view of who Christ is, we separate. This last week also was traumatic for me because I had a relationship with an Orthodox rabbi for over 10 years. And gradually, he got stronger and stronger. And I was forced this last year to really defriend him, to block his phone number from all calls to me, to block his messages from all text messages, to block his WhatsApp communications. Why? Because his blasphemy and his mockery of Christ and his mockery of the family of Christ, his mockery of Mary, his mockery of the cross, sending me pictures of birds stapled to crosses, was over the top. It reached the limit. And I had to say, that's it. No more. Never. So when and why do we separate totally from an unbeliever? It's when we have no further influence Christward on them. It's when contact with them is more a danger of us being ruined by them than it is of us being a Godward influence on them. And that was the principle that the Jewish men did not follow with their relationships with these Moabite women. God wants us to have relationships with unbelievers. God has left us here in this God-hating world and earth in order to have relationship with unbelievers. But our goal is to love them into the safety of the harbor of the kingdom of Christ. Our goal is to pray them into the refuge of the safety of the kingdom of Christ. Our goal is to influence them into the safety of the kingdom of Christ. Because all believers started out as unbelievers. Because believers come from unbelievers. But in Ezra's day, unbelievers were making believers into unbelievers. Verse 2, so that the holy seed have mingled themselves with the people of those lands. And when Ezra heard that, what could have Ezra done about this problem? He thought about it. He says, what could I have done? Where did I fail? I'm a priest. And Ezra heard that Israel had intermarried with this people of the land and that they were deep in an idolatry. And Ezra thought, I could have addressed this problem with a renewed push. Ezra thought to himself, maybe I should now try a renewed push toward patriotism. Maybe what I need to do is I got to get an Israeli flag everywhere. I could ask the Jewish people to display the Star of David everywhere. Ezra didn't push for patriotism. Ezra could have addressed this problem by giving speeches against intermarriages, against immorality, against idolatry. Ezra didn't go to the podium. Ezra could have formed a marriage counseling organization and invited the intermarried couples to come to counseling sessions to seek to get them to redirect their marriages Godward. Ezra didn't do that. All those things Ezra did not do. So what did Ezra do? Verse 3, when I heard this thing, I rent my garment and my mantle and plucked off the hair of my head and of my beard and sat down astonished. The first thing that Ezra did was to rip his garment, and then he ripped his mantle. Ezra's garment, as a priest, Ezra's garment was a white linen that he wore against his body. This is the inner garment. And for Ezra, this represented what was not seen by the people. It represented his heart. So when Ezra ripped his inner garment, Ezra was making a statement that his heart was ripped, his inner soul was broken, he was shattered by this sin. And then Ezra wore a mantle, a priest mantle, a beautiful mantle. And the mantle, which was what was seen by the people as a priest, and Ezra wore a mantle over his garment. And then Ezra ripped his mantle, and Ezra was making his statement that he had personally failed as a priest for Israel. Ezra didn't come to Jerusalem until after about 70 years since the first wave of Jewish settlers came into Jerusalem. And by ripping his mantle, Ezra was saying, I failed as a priest. I'm a failure. If only I had returned to Israel earlier, I would have had a chance to stop those intermarriages and idolatry. But now I've come and I've failed as a prince. And so Ezra ripped his outer mantle to make that statement of his own personal failure. And then Ezra did something unbelievable. He pulled the hairs of his head and his beard. He yanked the hairs out of his head and beard by the roots. You know, pull out hair by the roots. You know, you can, the way, if you go to the Creation Museum, you'll see the way a hair root is that it has interlocking. It interlocks. That's why you can take a person and you can lift them up by their hair. They're so strong. Pull out hair by the roots causes exquisite shooting pain, throbbing on the head and the face of Ezra. And that's what he wanted to do. That was his goal. He wanted to physically feel sharp, throbbing, persistent pain over Israel's situation. In no way did Ezra want to look at what Israel did from a philosophical, sterile, theological, it's not me point of view. Ezra wanted to be drawn personally into the pain of Israel's sin. That's why every time Ezra prays, he prays, our transgressions, me included, our sins, me included. And that's why Ezra plucked out the hairs of his head and his face by the roots till his face and his head dripped with the blood of those hair roots. You can't get yourself more involved in the problem than to yank the hairs of your head and face out by the roots. And last, Ezra just sat there in a state of astonishment. At first, he couldn't believe it. But with his inner garment torn, his outer mantle torn, the throbbing pain from plucking out the hairs, he just sat there in a state of silence. He wanted to pray, but he was so shocked he could not pray. He didn't know what to pray. He didn't know how to pray. He didn't know what direction to take in prayer. He was so shocked. He just didn't know what to say to God in prayer. He just sat there in silence, waiting for God to show him how to pray, what I should pray. You know, sometimes we find ourselves in that state. Sometimes we are in that Ezra state of shock, so shocked, we don't know what to pray. We don't know how to pray. And that's the time just to sit there in silence, like Ezra did, and wait for God and rely on God, who, Romans 8:26, likewise the Spirit also helps our weaknesses.
Tom Cantor's messages can be listened to and downloaded for free at friendshipwithgod.org. For other free resources, email us at tomcantor@friendshipwithgod.org or call us at 800-247-3051. Join our live services on YouTube by searching Friendship with God with Tom Cantor every Sunday at 5:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
What are you doing Sunday nights? Come join Friendship with God radio Bible teacher Tom Cantor of the Friendship with God Fellowship Church every Sunday night at 5:30 p.m. at The Vine at 9336 Abraham Way, Santee, California. Watch and listen live around the world to Tom Cantor Sunday evening on YouTube.com by searching for Friendship with God Fellowship or by going to our homepage at friendshipwithgod.org. That's friendshipwithgod.org.
This program is brought to you by Israel Restoration Ministries.